Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shops, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast and I'm joined today by Fraser Nelson and Katie Balls. So, Theresa May is in Africa in an attempt to drum up support for Britain's post-Brexit future. Katie, what's she been up to?
So, Theresa May has been perhaps following the footsteps of Margaret Thatcher on a visit to Africa by trying to drum up some business and talk about post-Brexit trade and the opportunities there. She's had a few small setbacks. There was one big speech she was giving in Cape Town today, and in advance, people saying this is going to have a terrific view, the speech, you know, the scenery, and it was so foggy you couldn't even see Table Mountain from it. So that was a slight hiccup. But I think the things that is making the biggest news from her trip isn't so much any of her plans for Britain's relationship with Africa, but what she's been saying to journalists who are travelling with her in the press pack. So we've had the news now that she has been asked, which I think was probably inevitable since it came up this time last year when she went on a trip. She was asked if she would fight the next election, if she would fight off attempts by her colleagues to overthrow her. And she said, "I'm in this for the long term." So I think the story we're going to get from this trip is headlines such as Theresa May vows to fight off Boris Johnson.
Fraser, how important are these African countries going to be for the UK after Brexit?
Well, economically, not very important at all. I mean, they're all fairly small economies, but politically, they could be a lot more important than they have been so far. I mean, right now, our trade with Africa has been constrained by the Common Agricultural Policy. The EU effectively decides the terms of its trade. And there have been, over the years, lots of British prime ministers saying, isn't it outrageous how we can't trade fairly with Mozambique and its sugar industry? And sure, the EU's tried to lower some tariffs, but it's still a great example of how we ought to be trading with countries rather than giving them aid. I mean, sure, by all means we can do both, but not being able to set a trade policy has left Britain only really with its aid as a tool. So you've got Theresa May trying to change the tone right now, trying to admit that Britain's taking a sort of neo-colonialist approach to Africa, seeing it as a charity case, and now talks about investing. But I'm not sure it's having that much of an effect. She hasn't really got any deals. She hasn't really got any great schemes that might be pending Brexit. She hasn't even given any examples of how existing EU membership constrains our relationship with Africa. So, again, this has got the potential as going in the right direction. But just sort of turning up and saying, you know, here I am, I bless the rain down in Africa, is not really going to change the Conservative Party's narrative. And as Katie says, very liable to get overtaken by a narrative of her own leadership.
And Katie, she's got a few more days in Africa, but what awaits her in British politics on her return?
I think a whole set of horrors, really. So we have the no-deal planning continuing, and another news line we've already had from her trip was a slapdown from the Prime Minister towards Philip Hammond. So this comes after last week Philip Hammond appeared to undermine some of the work by DEXU, by Dominic Raab, the new Brexit secretary, on the day of the no-deal technical notices, when he released a letter to Nicky Morgan in which he suggested that no-deal would be bad for the economy. Theresa May has said on this trip that actually no deal, you know, it won't be a walk in the park, but it won't be a disaster, quoting what the WTO chief has already said. When she gets back, she needs to steer in the way of the Brexit negotiations. She needs to try and avoid giving any big concessions to Brussels. She also needs to get some legislation through Parliament. That might sound like something any functioning government should be able to do, but remember that just before the recess, we had both sides, the European Research Group of Brexiteers and the ultra-Remainers, trying to scupper and really change all the bills Parliament was trying to get through. So she needs to do that, things like the immigration bill. And then finally, she has Tory party conference, where we've been given hints that she will try and relaunch her domestic agenda. But given that there is a Eurosceptic rebellion brewing in the grassroots, it could also have a few awkward moments for the Prime Minister and show her lack of popularity.
It's very difficult to work out what her domestic agenda is. I mean, I've got many criticisms of the May government, but perhaps the biggest one is a failure to articulate the wider purpose of Brexit. It ought to be so that the country can not just find new friends overseas, but revitalise some things at home as well. And it seems as British politics has been narrowed down to one big arm wrestle with Michel Barnier, and that's it. There is no real talk about conservative reforms anymore, no talk about welfare reform, no talk about school reform. And yet, we've got some pretty good results from the fruit of these reforms, unemployment down at a very low level. But you're not going to hear anybody linking this great results from anything the Conservatives have done. So it seems as even if the Conservatives have forgotten what they're for. And I'm not really optimistic that the Tory party conference is going to remind people what they're for. I mean, last year's one was such a debacle that Theresa May almost didn't survive it. So the bar is now set so low. A good conference this year will be one where she manages to complete a speech. And it's difficult then to see how she's going to overcome people thinking, well, are you going to stay after March? What's your Brexit plan? Because let's not forget, she doesn't have a working one.
But Fraser, did you think, I mean, this time last year, or straight after conference, that she would have survived this long?
No, she is the indestructible Maybot. She always astonishes people who think that no man born of women or no woman born of women should be able to survive what she has gone through. She has walked through fire and survived. And people are absolutely astonished at her kind of Game of Thrones style Khaleesi indefatigability. But that doesn't mean to say her premiership gets any better. I mean, she's there because the Tories can't think of anything better. It's, you know, I would never say that she can't hang on anymore. I think people have got used to not saying that after she blew her party's majority and then survived as leader. The one thing you can say about the Tories now is that they are rightly scared of themselves, that they realise if they were to start a fight, just how bloody it could be and just how quickly they can tear themselves apart. So they're refraining from this, but still the party staggers on with the absence of any real domestic leadership and the absence of any real domestic agenda.
And I think for a long time, although we have had lots of bouts, people saying they want to oust her, get rid of her, and these riots have flared up, there has been a majority view a lot of the time that you had to get Brexit through first. So some people thought there was a stage a bit earlier in the Brexit negotiations they could maybe get rid of her. When that passed, it did seem that it would have to be after Britain actually leave because of the point you're at. So I think that although she has survived till now, there is a point that's coming up where it would be surprising for her to survive that.
Another thing she's going to have to face is this People's Vote campaign. Katie, you mentioned it in your column last week. Have there been any more developments on that front?
So the BBC this week published a leaked memo which showed that the People's Vote campaign plans to try and get the Labour Party to adopt a different Brexit policy, one that allows for a second referendum.
That's exactly what you wrote in your column last week, Katie. So maybe the BBC should just read Katie's column and not try to get leaked memos, which you're privy to way before they are.
So this is one, I couldn't possibly comment, but this is one of a three-pronged strategy by the People's Vote campaign to try and basically get it so Parliament could bring about a second referendum. So on one hand, you obviously have the question of what would people vote for in a second referendum? Would Remain actually have much of an advantage? But before you get there, and that's the current focus, it's laying the groundwork in Parliament to make it possible to do that. So winning different MPs from across the House ran to the idea of a second vote. And I think they are still some way off when it comes to doing that.
It seems rather depressing, though, that the momentum seems to be with the People's Vote or the Remain campaigners. I mean, there are so many different varieties of them. Like this morning, I got through the post a car sticker from Vince Cable. He's my local MP. Stop Brexit, isn't it terrible? From this thing called the European Alliance of Liberals and Democrats. Now, the thing is, I would regard myself as a liberal, a Europhile and a Democrat. And for all of those reasons, I back Brexit. But there's nobody really organising any enthusiasm in that side. On my side of the debate, there is nothing but ignominy and debacle. And on the other side of the debate, there is energy, there is campaigning. I mean, sure, these guys are fighting behind the scenes, as Katie says, and sure, they don't have much of a parliamentary chance, but we are still living in an era where anything can happen politically. I mean, nothing is so crazy that it couldn't actually happen. That's the rule governing British politics right now. So I don't see how anybody could rule out the idea of this People's Vote campaign might actually succeed.
And the fact remains that as things stand, we do not know how Theresa May could get her Brexit blueprint through, even if she doesn't make any more concessions.
Yeah, because Michel Barnier has kicked it out. He seems to have done, doesn't he?
Yeah, and we've had Macron recently give it another evisceration of why he wouldn't accept it. But even if for some reason the EU were to magically turn around and accept the Chequers blueprint, there are lots of Brexiteers who feel so objected to it that they wouldn't want to vote it through.
Well, she probably couldn't get it through Parliament. But this is what puzzles me. The EU has rejected it. She can't get it through Parliament. Yet, so why is she or anybody else in the government clinging to the pretense that this Chequers plan might work. And where is the actual plan, or does she have one? And right now, it seems, I don't know how many weeks it's been since it was clear. I mean, James Forsyth did a cover story on that. She'd know she wouldn't get it through Parliament. There is no other plan. And it's as if she's hoping that one will magically kind of turn up. I mean, David Cameron did this. This is how he went through his premiership. He would do nothing, and at the last moment, something would magically appear, which worked for him right up until the moment when it didn't, and he had to resign. And I'm rather hoping Theresa May isn't copying David Cameron's kind of essay crisis form of leadership, because sometimes the essay does not come magically out of the air.
Perhaps instead of just a new domestic agenda at conference, Theresa May can reveal her Brexit plan B.
But do you think, Katie, there is any Brexit plan that could get the support of the bulk of the Conservative Party at the moment?
I don't think so, without a massive rethink or re-evaluation.
So perhaps that's why she's quiet, because anything, no matter how sly, no matter how cunning, just wouldn't get through her party.
But does that mean we're then looking at no deal? I mean, is that the reality?
I think there's a small chance that were they to say, we're going to park us in the EEA, the Norwich in the short term, but with the point of getting a Brexiteer MP who can now prepare us for, you know, the true Brexit we all voted for, maybe that would pass. I think some people have voted for it thinking that, you know, you're not going to leave it, great, soft Brexit, but you might get it through. Otherwise, you'll get to no deal. But you can get to no deal through lack of votes. But I think all the measures you might want to put into, in the eventuality of a no-deal Brexit, the hung parliament would make quite difficult.
I think something, I often get the feeling that she's waiting to dangle her party's legs over a cliff and saying, look at this no-deal, this is what it looks like. Sure, you're not wild about any of my options, but do you think the alternative is better? And I'm not sure that works, because the more she dangles their feet over the cliff, the more they believe they can fly.
Thank you, Fraser, and thank you, Katie. And just a reminder that this podcast is called Coffee House Shots. If you like it, please do let us know. We always like to hear from you.